The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Glenn
Beck. Boy, I cannot wait to talk to you today. We have a couple of guests. I have David French joining us here in a second. I want to hear from you today. Do you feel a little manipulated, betrayed, used? You think this is some grand master strategy? How are you feeling today? If you're a fan of both President Trump and the Second Amendment, how you feeling? I'm sure the NRA feels a little used. Yesterday, the president sat down with congressional Democrats and Republicans to discuss ideas on how to prevent more mass shootings, something we should be doing. But how do we describe this other than an absolute constitutional nightmare? Trump took an extreme, just an extreme hard left against the Second, the Fifth, the 14th, and I believe the Fourth Amendment. I mean, this is what we expected from other presidents, from the last president, right? That's what we expected. He didn't do it. In fact, what happened yesterday made President Obama look like Calvin Coolidge. This is an actual quote from the meeting. Take the guns first, then go through due process second. End quote. The president then proceeded to dump on the NRA, shoot down any idea of national concealed carry reciprocity.
Reciprocity.
How did I ever get on the radio? No. I have no idea.
No one else does either.
If you're a gun owner, or if you're a fan of the Constitution, this was the worst thing you would expect a U.S. president to say. Again, we expected this from Obama, but never expecting him to say it out loud in public. This guy did. And the reason why President Obama would have never said this in public if he believed that is because he knew every single person in the conservative media, every Republican, many NRA members who are Democrats would have called for his impeachment. Oh, let's just skip due process. Let's see. Mussolini comes to mind. China comes to mind. Where else do we have this system? North Korea has a good system. Well, I'll just forget about due process. Now, here's the thing. Some people believe, and some people are making excuses. Some people are saying, yeah, but he was talking about the mentally ill. Okay, do you remember when we all went to bat for the president, when the headlines in the New York Times said things like, Trump just made it easier for mentally ill people to buy guns? No, that's not what happened. What they were referring to was an Obama-era regulation mandating that people receiving disability payments from Social Security, which doesn't make you mentally ill, or receiving assistance to manage their benefits, not their checkbook, their benefits, would have been reported to the federal gun background check system. It locked out tens of thousands of people, elderly people, from buying guns, not based on their mental capacity, but on the basis of being classified by the government in a certain way. Now, I don't think that was the original intent, but you can see how handling the issue of who is mentally ill and who isn't is a very slippery slope. Mike Pence yesterday was right. We have to figure this issue out. Nobody wants guns in the hands of mentally ill people. Nobody. Everybody that I know, every NRA member that I know, thinks that the sheriff should have taken the guns away, I don't know, maybe on the third call? We have to figure this out. But eliminating due process and neutering the Constitution is not the way to do it. You can't seize someone's property. You are guaranteed due process. Well, it takes a long time. That's the point. So we just aren't a lynch mob. Forget for just a second that this is all about guns. Replace guns with literally any other issue and read back the words. Take action first and then go through due process second. Throw him in jail. We all know he's going to murder. That's not who we are. That's how tyranny is born. I guess the good news here is that Trump has said just bat crap crazy things in the past. Oh, I want a clean DACA bill, but it never materialized. So either Trump is pulling off some extreme master negotiating strategy, combining the art of war with his own book, The Art of the Deal, or he doesn't know what he's talking about, and his gut reaction is not based in the Constitution. He was giving Democrats in the room what they wanted to hear. Either way, whether he's, you know, playing, I saw this online last night, he's playing four-dimensional chess. Please, please. We're not going to see anything come of this, but this should be a huge red flag. If Obama would have said this, we would have been organizing ourselves in the streets. We either stand for the Constitution, stand by the rule of law, or we do not. We either call people out when they are wrong, no matter what side they're on, or we have no principles. So, you know, the Second Amendment is not going anywhere. But everybody should be calling the president out on this today. Support him when he is right, but call him out when he is wrong. And yesterday, he was very, very, very wrong.
It's Thursday, March 1st. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
David French, who is a senior fellow of the National Review, is joining us now. Hello, David. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Well, I've been better. Yesterday had to come as kind of a surprise to you because you're a guy who is authoring some of the bills they were talking about yesterday.
Well, yesterday it was one of those moments when somebody takes an idea that you've been talking about, twists it, distorts it, misstates it in such a grotesque way that it's unrecognizable. It was really an amazing moment. So you had Mike Pence talking about, in a very responsible and sane and sober way, this right. concept of a gun violence restraining order,
right,
which allows people to seek an order from a court and with due process, with a hearing, when someone is exhibiting dangerous behavior, to allow a temporary seizure of their guns when there's red flags. And in the vast, vast majority of these mass shootings, there have been red flags. And a lot of times people haven't had the tools to do anything about
right.
it.
Right, right.
This changes that. And then Trump stepped in and said, no, no, no. Take the guns first, then due process. And you just, you know.
He said, you know, there's a different system. Take the guns first yeah. and then due process. And I believe that system is fascism, authoritarianism, totalitarianism, communism. I mean, there is another system, David.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, you know, his views on due process are really interesting. So if you're a credibly accused wife beater in the White House, well, then due process. But if you're a law-abiding gun owner, then no due process. So it's a very strange system, a very strange strain of constitutional thinking there. But yeah, look, the bottom line is he's not drafting a bill. He's not proposing the bill. He doesn't really know about any of this in no. any detail.
I mean, when he was saying that Toomey was afraid of the NRA, it shows you have no idea. You have no yeah. idea.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing that was stunning to me about you, well, you know, I am on record many times for having low expectations of this president.
Yes.
But he underperformed even my low expectations yesterday. And the reason is that the NRA has been probably his most loyal conservative friend. The NRA has been relentless for him. A lot of people have criticized the NRA for taking a turn perceived turn towards Trumpism, where they're, you know, promoting the president as much as they're promoting their, you know, the Second Amendment. Mm-hmm. And so the NRA has been ferociously loyal to Trump. And yesterday he not only said, hey, take the guns first, due process second. He essentially said no concealed carry reciprocity. He made fun of a senator for being in the pocket of the NRA or being scared of the NRA. And then he flirted with the idea of an assault weapons ban, all in the space of about 30 minutes. And my jaw hit the floor. It was an amazing thing to see.
So David, a lot of people will say nothing's going to come of this, so don't worry. This was so jaw-dropping that, I mean, I've said this for years, long before Donald Trump. You have to have a guy in the Oval Office whose natural first instinct is constitutional, that it is freedom-based. For instance, when you have a problem, you know who also didn't get due process? The Japanese, as they were put onto a bus for an internment camp. I mean, when there's trouble and you are not based in the Constitution, that is a moment that could go horribly awry, as it has in the past here in America. When the president says, well, I'm not really afraid of the NRA, I don't think in 2021 he'll be afraid of anybody. And if we have trouble, this is a giant red flag.
Right. And, so not only is it a red flag on pure policy grounds, in other words, how does the president exercise the powers of his office? It's also, look, the bully pulpit matters. You know, this is a novel theory on the part of many parts of the conservative public that what the president says doesn't really matter, mm-hmm. Which is just a rationalization and an excuse. The bully pulpit matters when you're talking about the person with perhaps the greatest public platform in the world, and they're indifferent at best to the Constitution. They're obviously here, seem to really not care about the Second Amendment all that much. Those things matter, especially when the other side is locked in. I mean, the other side is locked in on messaging. It is locked in, has extraordinary party discipline right now. I believe it was, 156 of the 193 members of Congress signed on, Democratic members of Congress signed on to the assault weapons ban legislation that was just introduced. So the other side is focused and locked in. And, you know, when the bully pulpit is occupied by somebody who is not as focused, not as locked in, and apparently indifferent to core constitutional values, that's a problem.
We're talking to David French. We want to talk to him about a story that he wrote in The Atlantic, what critics don't understand about the gun culture. We'll go there here in a second.
Glenn Beck.
David French, who has just written a article for The Atlantic, what critics don't understand about the gun culture. And he really tried to reach out to the other side and say, look, I know there are people that don't understand guns or the gun culture. Let me try to demystify this a little bit so you can at least understand the other side. David, can you take us through this rather quickly?
Yeah, absolutely. So what I wanted to do was talk to folks. The Atlantic readers are mainly progressives, and I wanted to walk them through how a person enters gun culture and how it begins often with an actual threat or a perceived threat where you realize that the police can't protect your family in time, and how actually walking through that process of buying a gun, learning to use the gun, going to concealed carry permit class, getting training, actually brings you into a new community of folks and also changes your outlook on life in a significant and a positive way. And so I wanted people to understand that this isn't a product of like NRA lobbying or congressional actions. It's a product of people's lived experience and how they respond to threats to their safety and their family's safety. I just wanted to, to connect people with sort of the real story of people's lives.
Yeah, you know, I just had a friend of mine say yesterday, Glenn, I'm not worried about my family, and I don't, it's just not part of anything. I don't worry about any of this. Well, some of us do, and some people, mainly Hollywood, and people like me have the money to be able to have an armed security guy with him the whole time. But that's not the average person. I mean, my daughter, you know, if she had a stalker, she would want a gun. And I will tell you this, I am somebody who felt I was not responsible enough to own a gun, 20 years ago. And I had to, you know, I had to have serious threats in my life. And the gun was the last step that I took myself. And then I really took it seriously and became responsible enough to own a gun. And, I know everybody isn't like that, but they should be. And in your article, you point out that we were, as gun owners, we're horrified by the killer in, at the high school having these guns and all of the warning flags, and the system failed. And we were horrified here in Texas when the system failed.
Right. Right. Exactly. There's this perception, odd, strange. I mean, how evil do you think your fellow citizens have to believe that you're indifferent to what happened in Texas? But you get that rhetoric all the time that people who belong to the NRA have blood on their hands, that they belong to a terrorist organization. And the fact of the matter is, as I related in my piece, I'm not somebody who can afford armed security around my family. A guy came to our house. He blocked our driveway. He walked straight up to my wife and kids when they were in the backyard, and the police and I were many minutes away, demanding to see me. He had this oddly had an empty holster at his hip. He had just been driving slowly through my kid's school. I mean, this is. So this thing, this kind of thing, focuses the mind pretty intensely, yeah. And that's what it's those kinds of things. And look, there's a lot of people who are not in the public square, who are not out there tweeting and writing and doing TV appearances. That maybe it's an ex-boyfriend, mm-hmm. maybe it's they live in a dangerous part of town. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a lot of reasons why people quite reasonably say, when the police can't be there instantly and the police can't be there everywhere, I kind of need a first line of defense. So, and that is not unreasonable at all.
I've got about 45 seconds here, David. Can you tell me, what has the response been from those who read this?
I would say overwhelmingly positive. Of course, some people have been very angry. One person said it was like white privilege on steroids, something like that.
Whatever.
But overwhelmingly positive, not so much that they say, I want to join, I want to go buy a gun. But okay, I get this.
That's all we have to do. And look, we're never going to convince, nor do I think we have to really make the effort to go after the most staunch, people who are against it,
right.
Because they're never going to change their mind. But we have to try to reach people so they at least hear the reasonable, rational argument on the other side, and we can learn from them, they can learn from us, and maybe we can pursue, truly common sense things that will protect our families and protect our children in school. David French, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Glenn Beck.
Mercury.
Listening to the Glenn Beck program.
To be able to advance, we need to reach out to each other. I talking to David French. David French has not changed a single point of view of his in his principles. He's a constitutionalist. He's a small government freedom guy. And he's getting heat from some people for reaching out, just like I get heat. Look at what he's just done. He's tried to frame and tried to reach out to reasonable people. Now, people would say, well, the Atlantic, that's not reasonable. Well, maybe the Atlantic isn't. I don't know the people at the Atlantic. But perhaps some of the readers are. We must change our thinking. We are not believing in anyone. We don't believe in anyone, let alone people on our own side. I don't believe in anybody anymore. I don't have faith in anybody anymore. Well, we have to have faith in our neighbors. And we either believe that there is no one on the other side that actually cares about rights, that actually cares about the Constitution and the country and the founders. We either believe that there is no one on the other side that believes that. And that leads us to what? To where does that lead us? A split country? How do you win with that? Extermination camps? We either believe that, and that doesn't lead any place good, or we believe that, you know what, there's a lot of misguided people out there. There's a lot of people that I don't understand. There's a lot of people that probably agree with me, but I haven't talked to them. Or, you know, and on top of that, there's maybe 20%, 10%, 20% that just really do not care about the country. You know, when you're talking about the left and the right, I think there's 10%, but let's be really pessimistic. There's 20% on both sides that don't care about the Constitution. They only care about winning their way. They take totalitarianism if that's what it takes. I don't believe there's 40% of America that believes that, but let's just say that leaves 60% of us who are now watching this cartoon and saying, this is ridiculous. This is what is the there's common sense things we can do to protect our children. And you know what? One of them is to make sure that crazy people don't have guns. So we could do due process and do what the Americans always do. And that is, hey, if family members think that there is a problem, you can go to court and have their guns temporarily taken away. Because there's a problem. There's domestic abuse, or there's a situation like there was in Florida, and you can go to court and say, look, we believe this guy is a danger to himself and to others. We need to make sure he has no access to guns, that he does not have guns. And then the court says, okay, for 6 months or whatever it is, yes, then you have to come back and renew it. Otherwise, his guns come back. That's called due process. I believe everybody would be for something like that. It would, the devil is in the details, but we're reasonable. But how are you going to get there if we're just yelling at each other? If we're not trying to reach out? Do you want to live in a world where you believe the worst of the other side? Think of this with us. Stop thinking about, yeah, but. Just think about this with us. Are you the person they describe on television? Because I'm not, and I don't think you are either. So why do we believe that they're the ones that we hear people describe on television as well? I just want to read a couple of comments that came in, because I read a letter yesterday on the air from a guy who said, look, I don't agree with you at all, but you've given me hope that this can go beyond politics, that there are reasonable people who are just as disgusted by what's going on in Washington as I am, even though we're on the other side. Here are some of the comments. Glenn, people on the left hate it, hate our country, hate us, and are trying to destroy it. They hate Christians. They hate fiscal conservatives. They hate constitutionalist and law-abiding citizens. We're not trying to win, Glenn. We're trying to keep a republic together. Okay. If you believe that half of the country hates us, what's our solution? What's the solution? It has to be either we divide the states or we conquer them somehow or another. And how are you going to conquer them? Well, you can conquer them through force, or you can reach out and try to understand and try to build a relationship that we had. These are the neighbors that we used to love and cherish and trust 10 years ago. You know, people say to me, you've changed. My principles haven't changed at all. Not one bit. Not one bit. But my understanding of how to navigate in this world has changed dramatically. And if you haven't changed in the last 10 years, I just want to know how. Because everything around you has changed. How have you not changed your outlook on how to solve this problem? Because what we were doing, you know, 8 years ago wasn't working. It wasn't working. Okay, so are we just going to keep doing the same thing? Are we just going to keep shouting people down? And I know that's what people say the left did, and then the left will say that's what the right did. I don't care anymore. I don't care who started it. I don't care. I just want to solve it. And I won't solve it by you know, going back on my principles. If you don't have principles, you have nothing. If we don't have the Constitution, we have nothing. I was reading these comments and people were like, one liberal argument against the Bill of Rights I often hear is that the Bill of Rights was just an afterthought and it was only approved because they were tired of hearing about it. Seriously, they're all that ignorant to believe it. Well, first of all, there's a little bit of truth in that. We had the Constitution, and then because everybody was afraid the government was going to violate these rights, they decided, let's put them down on paper. Let's show people, let's demonstrate to them that the government will never do these things. So there is some truth to that. Now, maybe it's just a miscommunication, the way you've heard it phrased. But that is generally true. But it doesn't mean that it's not valuable. It was self-evident at the time. Everybody knew that, yeah, we're not going to take away guns. We're not going to do, you know, you have a freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, everything else. And people said, I don't know. I don't trust you. Okay, fine. Then I'll write it down. And it's a good thing they did, because it was James Madison that put in the Sedition Act. Our second president said, by the way, you say anything bad about me or the government and you're going to jail. Thank goodness we had written it down, because it isn't always self-evident when people get into power. How could James or John Adams, of all people, one of our patriots, how could he violate the Constitution with the Sedition Act? Because when you get power, you suddenly believe, I know better than everybody else. I know how to fix this. I know better than everybody. I'm here to tell you, I don't have any talent on loan from God. I struggle with the same problems that you struggle with, of my family, raising my children, how to deal with the internet in my life with my children, how to deal with it with me, struggle with my job, struggle with money, all of it. It's the same. The problem comes when people think they know, when they have power and they become arrogant. We have become arrogant in another way. We've become arrogant. We think we know who the other side is. until we talk to them. Now, I'm not talking about, I'll give you 20% of both sides. I ain't talking to Nazis, and I'm not talking to communists, because they are sad. Now, I'll reach out and say, hey, you know, this really is not right. You're open. I'm open to talking to you about it. I'm not going to compromise my principles, and I don't think you're going to either. We may be two ships that are just never going to meet. But I'm not going to write off 60% of America. I'm not. I think it's 80%. I'm not willing to say that my friends and neighbors who vote differently than I do don't understand. Government just can't come in and seize something. The government can't just say, oh, I'm going to take away this, or I'm going to put you in jail without due process. You know, when you really talk to people and you say, OK, so let's talk about background checks. Background checks, 97% of Americans say, yeah, we should have background checks. 97%. However, those numbers start to fall apart when you get down to the nitty gritty on what is included in that. Should that background check have access to your doctor information? So if you're seeing a psychiatrist, should that show up on your background check? Well, I don't know. Now, wait a minute. That's starting to get a little dicey. We really need to have conversations with each other. And we need to understand that they feel the same way about us. They feel the vicious, vitriolic attacks. We've seen it. We've lived it. We've lived it on their side. Well, you may not be attacking them. You may not be saying those things. But others who are, you know, wrapping themselves as, I'm a conservative Christian too. Those, and I've seen them. You've seen them. Conservatives just vicious and nasty and rumor mongering. You see it too. That's not who we are. But that's who they think we are, because we also think they're nasty. And they can't understand. I'm not like that. I go to baseball games with my kids just like everybody else. I'm not like that. Let's start having adult conversations. Let's start having hard conversations where we're a little uncomfortable, because it's out of our comfort zone. We have to start having those if we want to be able to find reason. We have to start having those conversations with people that make us a little uncomfortable.
Man, you know, some days it feels like we can't escape the world around us. It really does. We're bombarded with the horrible news, the divisive politics, and it's not like you can just turn your TV off anymore, because it's on your computer, it's on your cell phone, it's everywhere. This is why your home is so important. It's your refuge from the outside world. Surrounding yourself with things that make your home comfortable and beautiful can make all the difference. For years, we have trusted Overstock at home and at the studios here in Dallas. And remember, this is not some discount house with last year's leftovers. No, no. They have beautiful new furniture and decor, all at Overstock prices. My wife loves Overstock. Half the stuff in our house is from Overstock. And thank God it is, or I would have no money left. The same on-trend styles, better prices, up to 70% off, and receive free shipping on orders over $45. Plus, when you use the offer code BECK, you're going to earn an additional 10% discount. So take some time tonight and see all the ways Overstock can help make your home beautiful. It's Overstock.com. All things home, all for less. Overstock.com.
Loads of ammunition and a powerful AR-15.
Keep assault rifles out of the hands of people.
I want this to be the end of the Second Amendment.
The latest school shooting has ignited the gun debate. Now more than ever, you need to know the facts. Get Control, exposing the truth about guns, on Amazon and wherever books are sold.
I really want to take phone calls next hour. Let me take Joe quickly in Massachusetts. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Glenn.
Hi.
The 20% on either side.
Yeah.
You, throw them out the window. You're right. It doesn't matter. The problem with the 60%, and I live in Massachusetts, I know, they don't want to be educated. They're ignorant, and they don't have the time. They don't care, whatever, but they just run to whoever says what they want to hear. And it's not an issue of taking a side. It's an issue of them just, they want to have their life, and they're so used to the government being involved that it just is the way it is anymore.
So, Joe, could you say that they probably feel the same way, that there are some in that 60% that feel the same way about the Republicans? Because I can tell you that I think there's a lot of Republicans that fit in that category as well as Democrats.
No, I agree. I agree.
So
I'm saying just the average people in the middle, I don't know how you reach them, because I've tried. I mean, I know a lot of people. There's a lot of people in Massachusetts who aren't rabid leftists, but
right,
they're so used to the government. It's just, oh, that's the way it's always
sure
been.
So, but the only way to be able to make an impact, the only way is to be able to live your life with principles, credibility, and stability, and then reach out and be friends with people and talk to people. Not everybody's going to jump on the bandwagon. We just have to start
Glenn
believing
Beck,
that there's
Mercury,
there's worth in every individual.